Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode 5, Clue. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Remaker's Mark Podcast. This is Episode 5, Part 2, where we continue our discussion of the murder mystery classic, Clue. The first half, we discussed recasting, and this we're going to talk about minor casting roles, as well as some plot and filmmaking challenges and changes that we would make. Before we get into that, I've got a couple things I want to address. First and foremost, we want to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for their promotional consideration. Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest held at the Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis. It's hosted by Nell's Lens of Huge Theater. It features drink specials from Tall Grass Brewing, and players can win retro games and systems from Level Up Games, as well as free show tickets and free drinks from the Triple Rock. To find out more about Tipsy Pixels, check them out at tipsypixels.com and find them on Twitter at twitter.com/tipsypixels. With me, as usual, are my friends and colleagues and panelists, Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. And you?
I'm well, thank you. Jeremy Nilsson, how are things in your world today?
Full of life. And you?
Excellent. Vim and vigor, yes. Lee Harkstargedirstadarndabedargedirstifdar. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I entered a fugue state there. I don't quite know what happened.
That was a very ancient dialect of German, yes.
Yeah, well, that's my people. And finally, Mark Josting, how are you tonight?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Very good. Before we dive into our minor casting, I want to talk about some feedback that we got specifically from Twitter. I put a call out to people to say, who would you potentially recast in a remake of Clue? Our friend Bill Connell at WJCSTP on Twitter gave a whole listing, which is great. He listed Nick Offerman as Colonel Mustard, Elijah Wood as Mr. Green, Jason Bateman as Mr. Body, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Wadsworth, which should be very interesting. Jane Krakowski as Mrs. Peacock, which I think is a great pick.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
like that
a lot. Yep, that's a great one. Jessica Paré as Miss Scarlet.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, Jane Lynch as Yvette, and then finally my favorite of the bunch, Carrie Brownstein as Singing Telegram Girl.
Nice.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I like that one. Yep. And then in the conversation with our Tipsy Pixels friend Pete Bastian and I, Josh Freeman, who's at jfreeman159 on Twitter, said for Wadsworth, he wanted to see Sacha Baron Cohen, and that was great. And then we kind of went off on a tangent a little bit and talked about Tim Curry roles, and basically this started out a discussion of how amazing Sacha Baron Cohen would be as the Frankenfurter role in a Rocky Horror remake. And then we pretty much all geeked out on that because, I mean, wow, yeah. That would be astounding. And then last but not least, my favorite comment of the bunch, another Tipsy Pixels friend, Art Allen, at Punsultant on Twitter, suggested for the entire movie, Eddie Murphy as everyone. So I guess that's really kind of the nutty Professor Clue edition, which is, I'm down with that. You know, I think we can...
with a little Pluto Nash.
With a wee bit of Pluto Spice Nash, up. As we all should have. So thanks to everybody for that feedback. Again, if you want to provide feedback or comments to us, you can do so at mathishard.net. You can find us on iTunes for subscription and ratings there. So if you'd like to rate us, that would be great. We always love to hear what we're doing well or what we're not doing well, and love to hear your thoughts about how you would change movies and how you would remake things. So definitely hit us up and let us know. I want to do a quick overview of the last episode's discussion and talk about who we chose from our various major roles casting. So we had 7 major characters, and we voted as a group quite capriciously, I must say, and chose the winners. And so in the role of Colonel Mustard, originally played by Martin Mull, we chose Andy's choice of J.K. Simmons.
Yay!
That was the correct choice. Yes. In the role of Miss Scarlet, originally played by Leslie Ann Warren, we again chose Andy's choice of Julianne Moore.
Again, yay!
Don't get cocky, kid. Just be cool. In the role of Professor Plum, originally played by Christopher Lloyd, we went with Jer's brilliant choice of Rainn Wilson.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In the role of Miss Peacock, originally played annoyingly by Eileen Brennan, we went with Mark's choice of Joan Cusack, mm-hmm. which I think is a great pick.
Mm-hmm.
in the role of Mr. Green, originally played by Michael McKean. We went with my choice of Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
In the role of Mrs. White, originally played amazingly by Madeline Kahn, we went with Lee's choice of Alison Brie, which would be great.
Yes. Also the right choice.
Yep. And then
thank you.
Finally, in the role of Wadsworth the Butler, originally played by Tim Curry, irreplaceably so, but we're still going to do it, we chose Jer's choice of Eddie Izzard. We also talked a little bit about the minor character choices that we're going to go through here, and it ended up in a three-way tie. And by virtue of my not having picked a movie thus far, I am the big winner. Yay, democracy. Falling backwards into success. Yep, falling backwards into success. That is my people's way. Very, very pleased with that. So,
it's the American way.
It's the American way, indeed.
Gerald R. Ford.
Yay. Proud. So for the choice of the next movie, gentlemen, we're going there. It's time. It's on the lips and minds and ears of people. It's time for Star Wars. That's it. Oh my God, I just got goosebumps. Holy crap. Seriously, that was amazing. Wow. That was a
stunning. Do it again. Do
that
it again.
Force. Yeah. That was the force.
Hold on. I want to. Okay, do it again. I'm ready.
Okay. Wait, who did it?
Who's doing
you.
What?
You say Star Wars again.
Star Wars.
Okay.
I went a little sexy with that Star Wars. I apologize.
Star Wars.
Brass bikini Star Wars.
I'm excited for that.
So we're gonna discuss the original Star Wars, A New Hope, and we're gonna recast that and talk about how we would change it. So that'll probably be about a 9-part series going into 2014, which we're really excited about. So by the time the next Star Wars movie comes out in 2015, we'll likely have stopped talking about it. But no, seriously, folks, for reals, we're gonna do A New Hope, and we're super excited about it. So yeah, I can't wait. It's gonna be awesome. Not to hype us up too much, but it's gonna be awesome. So I'm excited about that.
Either our downloads are going to increase tenfold, or we're just not going to get any.
Exactly. Everyone will.
It's going to be a 9-hour long podcast.
Or people will shun/hate us. We'll see. Either way, it's a success. We're talking about Star Wars. I'm cool.
Our votes for characters will be 5 separate votes for our own picks and no consensus at all.
Exactly. Except for Christopher Walken as Obi-Wan. That's. Everyone will pick that. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's move on and talk real quickly about the minor characters for this. So the first minor character that we wanted to talk about was the role of Mr. Body. Mark, tell us about Mr. Body.
Certainly. Originally played by Lee Ving, Mr. Body, the mysterious seventh guest, turns out to be the one who's blackmailing all the main characters. He comes to the party bearing gifts, very nicely wrapped for items which are supposed to make you dead. My choice for Mr. Body is Tay Diggs. He's been around for a long time, in a number of films, a number of TV series, but always as an incredibly handsome man. And I think that he could do the slick and slightly smarmy, kind of cunning, conniving thing, and I think he can do it really well. And I'd love to see him do it again.
Yeah, I love that pick. It's a fairly thankless role. Like, there's not much to it, but I think he would bring the appropriate menace and personage to that role. So, yep, I like it.
You've got to be a corpse for most of the movie.
That's true.
You gotta hold
he
your
lies around
really
real well.
Jared, let's hand off to you.
My minor character is the cop that shows up. Another, again, very, very short role. Basically, the role of the cop is to come in, get suspicious, use the phone, die. So I was imagining somebody that would be a not necessarily a box office draw, but at this point in the movie, everything's rolling along, and all of a sudden the doorbell rings, the door opens. It's like, hey, what is he doing
it's
here?
It's you.
it's Samuel L. Jackson. Nice. So that's who I went with. Nice. Samuel L. Jackson as the cop.
Beautiful.
Bring a little bit of menace, but then die right after, away, which I think would be really...
A bit more gravitas than Bill Henderson, who played it originally.
Yeah. Right. Bill Henderson, who my favorite role of his was in City Slickers.
Yes.
But he could come in. It'd be just the fact that he's in this movie would be a laugh. And then I think that he could bring just a weight to the role that in itself would be funny. Like, why is he being so serious in this obviously stupid, stupid movie that's really funny? So
I have to wonder if he'd be willing to take the role, because it seems like the cop kind of goes out like a bitch.
If Quentin Tarantino directs this, then yes, he will.
And if you've seen Deep Blue Sea.
Yep.
He goes out like a bitch.
Yeah, so yeah, that's true.
He's used to that.
That's such a great death scene.
The other guys.
Totally is.
The other guys, he and Dwayne The Rock Johnson kind of go out in a blaze of glory on a very abrupt note as well.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, everybody.
Oh, jeez.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Dwayne, not Wayne.
I said Dwayne.
I said Dwayne, too.
Okay.
Drain?
Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Drain The Rock Johnson? Johnson? It sounds like an old folk group.
Boy. Kyle, I want you to wow us with your pick for Yvette the French Maid.
I'm not only going to wow you, I'm going to wow you. Huh? Huh? Okay, so I'm picking Yvette.
Hey-o!
I'm ashamed of myself. So the role that I'm recasting, the minor role, is Yvette, originally played by Colleen Camp, who I'm fairly certain was picked because of the size of her bosoms, which is cool. I'm not going to fault her for that. The Yvette performance was fine. You know, she was supposed to be sort of vaguely French, and then that ends up not being the case, and then she gets killed. It was fine, but it pretty much, and they allude to it very, very directly throughout the movie, that she had this heaving bosom French maid outfit. And I won't quite go to that end, but I definitely wanted to have sort of a legitimate French maid thing. And so I went with Ava Green, who I think is just an amazingly good actress and really doesn't deserve this role, but I'm still going to throw it at her anyway. So I really think she's wonderful and beautiful. So yeah, I'm going with the legitimate French actress, Ava Green.
Well played.
Yes.
Indeed. Thank you. Was that wowing enough, Jer?
Not only was that wowing, it was wow.
Hey.
Wow.
I'll try to insert some sort of whatever the audio equivalent is of those zoomy eyes from cartoons. Like
the old-timey car horn.
Exactly. It'll be rife with those. All right. Moving on to the very detailed part known as The Motorist. Andy, tell us about The Motorist.
I think The Motorist is truly the linchpin that holds the movie together. No, he was originally played by Jeffrey Kramer. That's right, the Jeffrey Kramer. He is, again, another character who gets stranded on the road, comes in, needs to use the phone, gets locked into the parlor or one of the rooms, and then dies. I picked Lamorne Morris for this role, and you're saying, who's Lamorne Morris?
He
plays Winston on the TV show New Girl, and he is very, very funny. And I think he would lend a little neurosis to this role. Especially I would get freaked out if I walked into a strange house with strange people and got locked into a room. I think he would give that a little bit of freakiness too.
Yeah, in the '80s, people must have been more accepting of being locked in strange rooms by suspicious people, because nobody really freaked out by it.
It just, they were more like annoyed by it.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey,
wait a minute.
Aww.
All right. I'll just make a phone call.
Oh, shucks.
At least I'm locked in this room with Brandy.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess I'll play some pool.
Not the singer.
So, all right. Lee, to you.
Thank you. The Chief, originally played by Howard Heisman, I think that's how it's pronounced. Hessman.
Yep.
The WKRP guy.
Johnny Fever.
Yes, there we go. He has five lines. He checks in with the group to make sure that his inside guy is still there. And then he sends in the cavalry, essentially. And I picked someone who, kind of in the same vein as Jer, just someone who everyone in the audience would be delighted to see. And I went with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Solid pick.
Yep, I love that pick.
Very good.
And Howard,
he could play police.
Howard Hessman was uncredited originally, which I thought was interesting. I don't really know why.
Oh, but really?
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. So maybe Dan Aykroyd would follow suit in that regard.
He was living off of WKRP money. He didn't need it.
No. And Police Academy money.
Yeah.
I wonder if they did that to keep it a surprise of any sort. It's not like there was the internet then that people could look it up to look for him. So I don't know. Hard to say.
Was he really that big of a draw that it would be like, hey, what the? Howard Hessman.
I think it was more like Howard Hessman as police chief. You know, like maybe that would give something away with that. I don't know. Although they do say that the police are coming forever and ever and ever. So, you know, that's all right. Okay, yeah. So those were the minor character choices. We did vote on those, and my my choice of Yvette did win that one. So, yay, Yvette.
And now a word from our friends at Professor Plum's old-timey singing telegrams.
Hey, Andy, why are you so down?
It's my birthday, and no one remembered.
Are you sure no one remembered?
Well, who could that be?
I am your singing telegram.
That's right, Professor Plum's old-timey singing telegrams let them know you care.
Whether it's birthdays,
anniversaries,
surgeries,
bar mitzvahs,
graduations,
or crime scenes with a rapidly growing list of fatalities,
Professor Plum's old-timey singing telegrams has got the perfect tune for you.
Professor Plum's old-timey singing telegrams.
They're killer.
So now moving on to our traditional episode part two discussion of the plot, tech, and filmmaking changes. And this is less how we would change the movie and just more kind of a discussion about Clue itself and you know, how it got to be where it is, a little bit about other types of movies of this sort. So it's not a lot of filmmaking changes necessarily, but just a lot about kind of the type of movie that Clue is. And the first part of that is that this started as a game, and we touched upon that in the first half of thing, first episode. You know, the fact that this started as a board game, and this is the first movie to be based on a board game, which seems like a proud or a strange brag, but a you know, one nonetheless. And Jerry, you said, does anyone still play Clue? Would people not get that? And might that even be something that could be taken to our advantage? Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, I think that it's, I guess, a double-edged sword. As the more that I thought about it, one of the things that I find so clever about the movie is that it really goes out of its way to be the board game. The weapons are the exact same. The characters are the exact same. It's not trying to say, it's not Battleship, where it's has nothing to do with the game at all, except for the name. It really is almost a live retelling of a game of Clue, where you're trying to figure out who did it, and it stays true to kind of the concept of the game. That being said, do people nowadays, besides people in our generation, know what Clue is? Is Clue still sold and played? Do people know, if you said Colonel Mustard, would they understand that that's not a brand of condiment? So
should be, though.
It should. I think that might be a side project for us. And if people don't, does that really hinder a remaking of this movie? If Clue, a remake of Clue came out with all of these fantastic characters that were cast that we just created, which would be a box office smash, I'm sure.
Of course.
Would it matter that people had no idea that it was based on a board game from the 50s?
I wonder if people play it, if there's a video game version of this or some other version of it, because board games probably aren't nearly as popular as they were in the 70s and 80s simply because of technology and other means to entertain ourselves.
I remember having a video version of the game Clue on VHS, of course.
I remember that too.
Yeah, and there were little interstitial movies that you would have to watch, and I saw that at about the same time as I saw the movie Clue, and it's it pales in comparison.
Yeah. So I think, Chair, I think that you're right. It's a two-edged sword because there's a lot of the hook of the movie is that, oh yeah, this is that board game I used to play, and you're instantly familiar with the characters without seeing 1 minute of the movie if you know what the game is. So that familiarity would be lost to an audience who doesn't have the foggiest idea who Miss Scarlet is or anything like that. So I'm not sure if that would help us or not if this is played to an unfamiliar audience.
The fact that everything is so much like the board game just adds cleverness to a movie that really shines in how clever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mm-hmm. a dialogue rich movie that it's just so tight in how it's paced and how it's spoken, and the fact that these characters and these weapons and these rooms and all things come right from the board game, I think adds to that. It would still be a great movie if the board game Clue never existed, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say if it was written as well as the original was, and with that pacing, then I agree. Then I think it could still appeal to a wide audience.
I would agree with that.
I wonder if the Battleship remake started off being very literal, and then it just kept slowly drifting away from that. You know, like it's like, well, I guess, you know, well, what about aliens? Okay, I guess, sure. Like somebody throws that out there. It's Battleship, but with aliens. Oh, okay.
We're not going to do B7 and then B8.
Right.
And then...
Giant red pillars are not going to fall from the sky and land on our ship. Yeah, so I think it would have to be a fine line. I like the idea that some distance could allow us flexibility in changing things up a little bit. It's not, I think it would be kind of that sacred cow for some people, but I think a new audience would be willing to give it a little bit of distance by virtue of not necessarily knowing that. So I think we could mix it up a little bit. I mean, you know, the moment you recast it, you're mixing it up to begin with, but you know, I think it would allow us to do things a little bit differently. And this is a weird comparison, but I think of like the Saw movies and how each, I can't believe I say this, how each room in a Saw movie has its own danger. Like if the house was more of a character, and there's a little bit of that, you know, it's like there's people hidden when the cook is killed and then she falls out and, you know, they deal with the menace, but it's not like the house acting against them. And I think that might be an interesting thing. Then again, you're verging on like The Haunting of Hill House, which, I mean, this is literally called Hill House. I guess it was named after one of the producers, but, you know, but I think that might be interesting. You could kind of ratchet that up a little bit. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is, but there's things you could do to modify it ever so slightly to have that be another thing that is up in the air, you know, make it a little bit more ambiguous, a little bit uncertain. You might lose some of the comic aspect of that though. That could be a challenge.
Well, and can you imagine a straight up movie based on the board game Clue that wasn't a comedy, that was really a whodunit thriller? Because I think that would be a completely different remake that would really be good as well.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, even without the brilliant comedy of the original, it's a pretty tight just murder mystery film.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that is right on. I would love to see that. I think that it could lend itself to a really, really tight, dramatic kind of, what is it, Identity? Is that the one where they're stuck at the trailer park and people are killing each other off and they don't know who it is? Is that?
It's a motel.
Turns out it's all in John Cusack's mind. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Yep. Big time spoiler alert.
Just not John Cusack.
Yep. So something like that, where it's, you know, that everything is ratcheted up because it's all, there's no leaving, you know, everybody's locked in. So yeah, I dig that. Anything else on the fact that people might not be aware of Clue at all?
It would be a damn shame.
It's true. It's true. I looked on Amazon.com while we were chatting, and it is still, it's available on Prime. It's still there. It's very well rated, so that's good. So it looks like you can still purchase it. I don't know how many sales they have, but at least it's still out there, so that's good.
I read somewhere that the updated version is a little different than the original. It's still, there's a mystery that you have to solve, but it's not a murder. It's something else.
Yeah. It's a lost puppy.
Boo. Exactly. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I know it's a family game and everything, but I thought that was a little too far.
Yeah, I don't want to see it being like Bobo the Clown with the silly string.
It's like, oh, somebody stubbed their toe. Let's figure out how.
I'm intrigued by this Bobo the Clown and silly string. You know, I think there's something there.
It would be in the room full of the plastic balls.
As it should.
In the bounce house. Clue is one of five or six games that Target sells as their classic bookshelf games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, good call. I mean, that's also a good sign.
Well, yes. We know for sure they won't get played then. They'll just be put on bookshelves.
Womp, womp.
Thank you. No,
but it's like a secret.
Secret games. Okay, well, we've officially ran out of that topic. movies that are based on games. We've touched on this a little bit with the recent Battleship, but Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about the fact that movies that are based on games have not had the most storied of pasts?
Yeah. And you know, I was thinking part of that is that maybe in contrast in the success of the movie Clue, is that the board game Clue was in a really unique position to become a film. I mean, the characters are people, and there's an actual story already set out for you. I mean, the board game doesn't give you the conclusion. You have to draw those out of cards, but there's been some internet rumblings about an upcoming Monopoly movie, and I'm pretty sure that the main characters in that aren't going to be like a thimble and an iron that just walk around a square all the time.
Aww.
Yeah, I wish.
the CG but, tests they did just didn't pan out.
Really? No, it's too bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's cross our fingers, but I don't think that's going to happen. That being said, I mean, there are some games out there. I mean, there's a couple of video games that I haven't seen the movie Doom, although I did watch the scene where they actually do the first person running around the gun out in front of the camera, and yep. Even that wasn't that good, but I don't know. I'm being unfair to that one because I haven't seen it.
I'm amazed that they haven't done a whole movie of that. I think that would be really interesting, like a whole point of view movie. I don't know.
Because maybe. People would be getting motion sick and throwing up in the theaters.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I get the feeling it would be really tiresome.
They did that in Blair Witch and I hated it.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Huh. Yeah, but that was that was different. I don't know. I mean, people sit and play Halo for 11 hours at a time. They got to be able to manage a movie of it. I guess maybe it's different
you're actually
when you're
pushing
in control.
The buttons then.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, well, there's at least one other game that I know that became a pretty high-profile movie, and I think that Dungeons & Dragons as a game was in a pretty good spot to, to make that leap, because it, really features, if not human, then humanoid characters in a world that you can easily imagine. It's just too bad that movie sucked so badly.
Yep. The Curse of Jeremy Irons, who I love usually, but...
It came too early. I mean, it missed the high fantasy is super cool mark by a couple of years. Had it come out now, that Tolkien and Narnia and all these other franchises are hitting and hitting big. Yeah. I think a Dungeons and Dragons movie would actually probably be pretty well received now, but it came out too early.
Yeah, and when somebody finally does do a World of Warcraft movie, it'll probably be huge.
I just heard that someone's attached to that. I have to look. Okay, keep talking, I'll look.
I am a seer. That's what I am. Anyway, yeah, I for Dungeons & Dragons, I'm totally ready to blame the writing and directing.
Wasn't that Uwe Boll?
No. It
it should have been.
It should have been. It would have helped. Jeremy Irons, I mean, say what you will, but I mean, definitely a serious acting chops. Thora Birch, great actress. Marlon Wayans can be a great actor, and none of them were anything but terrible to watch this movie. I don't know I don't know if I'm ready to claim a redeeming factor in it, but I think The Beholder could be it. But I'm every bit as big a nerd as the whole Dungeons and Dragons world.
I'd like to point out that the Resident Evil series has done fairly well. They've had some success. They've made 5 movies.
Good point.
Four of which are actually watchable.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm willing to give those more credit than that.
Yeah, that's a video game too, which is a little bit different. We're looking mostly at board games here. But yeah, I think, we did talk about Doom, unless there's a Doom board game that I'm not aware of, which would be interesting. So I looked it up, and the World of Warcraft movie director is, I don't know if he's officially signed or not, but it's looking like it's Duncan Jones, who did Moon, which is an extraordinarily good movie. Really, really good. It doesn't really translate into a World of Warcrafty kind of world, but he's also David Bowie's kid, which is pretty cool. So that gives me hope, at least.
Yeah, me too.
So I made a note when we were talking about this. How on earth did this get made? Like, one of my favorite things to think about is to think about boardroom pitches for movies, right? So, like, Labyrinth, right? So you go in and it's like, okay, stick with me here. It's going to be part puppets. You got David Bowie juggles mirror balls. He's got a huge cod piece. There's a young Jennifer Connelly that's overtly sexualized, but just enough to be legal. And then you've got the farting bog. I mean, it's like, it is, so it's just like, well, wait, what? Hold on. Like, so I would love to hear, like, what was the pitch for Clue? It's like, all right,
yeah,
stick
yeah.
with me here. Board game, movie, yeah. you know, like, how
we're going to make a board game into a movie, but yeah. first, I want you to smoke this weed.
yeah. It's
like sold.
Yeah. So I wonder how this got made. Like, was this scene back then as ridiculous as now when we see Hasbro presents Transformers or like, yeah. you know, I mean, like, it, I don't know. Like, right now, it's hard to take that seriously, even though we see it all the time. We see it on Transformers
I think,
and G.I. Joe.
I think to an adult audience, it's a little harder to swallow, but I mean, the kids' movie industry. It's just mushroomed into this, you know, this giant industry that's essentially fueled by toys. That there's these sometimes direct to DVD, direct to whatever movies that are, oh, Barbie does this, or, you know, yeah, Dora yeah. the Explorer does that, or that, you know, like I said, they're essentially run by or inspired by toy franchises, which I don't think is too dissimilar from this as a starting point.
But do you really think that Clue was a kids movie when it came
out? No. Like I said, I think the playing this to an adult audience today would be a lot more difficult. I just say it does exist and just targeting a different audience.
Oh, I gotcha.
Right. So, I mean, when the Transformers cartoon came out, it was made to sell more toys. So was the idea of this to sell more Clue board games? You know, like, what was that the end goal? Or did they just say, like, you know what, this might be something that would be interesting to do? So I just don't know. I would love to go back and see what the history was of that, like, you know, look through Variety for years and see what that was like.
Like, did Hasbro even have this, you know, how much of a stake did they have in this movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe John Landis was playing Clue and he's like, what do you think Colonel Mustard was really like?
I bet he was nice.
And then they just spawned off of that and like, we should actually flesh out these characters and make a murder mystery about him.
I mean, the third placard, or I don't know the exact number, but I mean, it's like something Clue and then based on the Parker Brothers game. I mean, it's like right away. It's not anything that they bury at the end of the credits. It's like they show it in the title sequence. Yeah, it just fascinates me. I would love to hear. I mean, John Landis wrote this. Like, that's just insane to me. This amazing comic writer wrote this, you know, board game movie. I just think that's just
and
crazy.
Oh, did he write it well?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did. He did a very good job. And it comes through in the end product. But yeah, it's just so strange to me. Yep. So, Andy, you made a note here. Could this model work for other games? A Monopoly movie, which we touched on a little bit? A Settlers of Catan franchise? What else would you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just wanting to see if there were any ideas that people had about other games that today could possibly spawn a movie. And we're kind of tipping our head a little bit to our nerddom towards games. I think we're all very fond of board games of the geekier sort. Monopoly movie, you know, was that movie already made with Wall Street? I don't know, maybe.
There weren't enough mustaches.
Or top hats.
Monocles.
Or monocles. Or monocles. Settlers of Catan, yeah, you could loosely base it on that game, but that game is so abstract in a lot of ways that I think it would be based on the game in title only. And A Ticket to Ride, for those of you who don't know, is a board game where you try to build a railway empire in kind of turn of the 19th to 20th century America or Europe, depending on the game you're playing. And so, you know, we've talked before about doing a murder mystery on a train. I think, Jerry, you brought it up in a previous episode, that this seemed like that could be maybe an interesting fit. But I don't know. You know, would this just be trying to recapture the one-time magic that was Clue, and would it be just an exercise in futility? I don't know. What do you guys think?
What I think works for Clue, and I think Mark talked about this, is that it's a game that comes with a plot and characters, uh-huh. and all the rest of these don't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no plot to the story of Ticket to Ride besides you're a railway baron that's trying to make railroad money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not an entertaining
not regular money, but railroad money.
Railroad money. Settlers of Catan, I mean, there's a little bit, but again, the game itself doesn't give you characters. You are the character.
Yeah.
Clue is unique in that you are one of these six people that the game gives you. And I think that plays in its favor, that everybody is universally coming to the same set of people and the same set of circumstances.
What about something like Risk, like you said earlier? Because that, while it doesn't have a written story, so to speak, but it has a history that the game is, you know, set in very, very clearly. So could that be a basis for a movie, or is that really more suited towards like a mini series or something?
Actually, the game of Risk was what the movie Das Boot was based on.
Well, I stand corrected.
Really? Huh. Interesting.
No, that's
interesting.
That's not true.
You bastard.
Kyle, can you just mute Jer for the rest of the podcast?
I can't, actually. He has to mute himself, so we're pretty much pretty much screwed
no.
here. Yeah. Yep. Sorry.
Yeah. Jer, could you mute yourself?
I did like that Cliff Clavin moment, though. That was quite good. Actually, the movie Das Boot was based on the board game Risk. I like that. Wow, that was like a Boston Cliff Clavin. Oh, I was set in Boston. Anyways, carry on. So, Lee, you made a comment here. Would this work in a modern-day setting? So do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, and I was thinking of a different time that a remake could be told in. Modern day, I think technology would provide maybe some obstacles or maybe some just more interesting ways to tell the story. I think cell phones is a big one, you know, unless this mansion is in Antarctica. I'm pretty sure there will be cell coverage. So I don't know, like, how that would be explained away, I guess. Me personally, after thinking about it, you know, thinking about different decades to put it in, I really like that it's set in the 50s. I like that there's this looming threat of communism, which is kind of the reason that they're all here. It's one of the reasons that has gotten each one of them into the predicament that they're in. And I like that a lot. It's just a really good, motivator, I guess, for these characters. So I really like that it's set in the 50s, and I like how the dialogue reads like it's a movie from the 50s.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't catch it until I was reading through the plot summary a little bit, but the sphere of influence of McCarthyism is over this, and that everybody's a government worker and they all have secrets. So I think, and even in the kitchen scene, it's the McCarthy hearings on in the background. And so without explicitly noting it, I mean, maybe you might have caught it. I didn't until I read it, but like, you know, it's a bunch of people who work in government who have been brought together because they've been blackmailed and have secrets. So I think by virtue of that being the big scare at the moment, and at the end, they refer to communism a few times. They call it the red herring. So, you know, I think that arches over that. And I think, you know, in 85, I think we were still Cold War. Yeah. I mean, that was still, you know, communism was certainly a prevalent thing and certainly something on the
wall fell in 1989.
Yep. So, you know, that's something that lived then still differently than in the 50s, mind you, not McCarthyism, but communism nonetheless. So, you know, I think if you were able to establish something equivalent nowadays, that would work. Or maybe you would have to find that, you know, I mean, cell phones aside and connectivity aside. But I think that type of overarching paranoia could suit the remake and a modern setting very well.
Maybe like a war on terror type thing.
Yeah, I think that's a very nice parallel that in America, in, you know, the days since 9/11, you know, we have had this this fear that we've been infiltrated by people that are trying to by foreign powers that are trying to do us harm, and you know certainly that's exactly what McCarthyism was all about in the 50s.
Yep, definitely. And then the last thing that we talked about was the fact that this had multiple endings. So on the DVD that I had, it showed them all sequentially. So it showed three different endings, the first one, the second one, and the third one. Looking through the IMDb page, it said that a fourth one was filmed, but was never actually aired. Now, in the theaters, only one of the three endings was shown, which I think is really, really cool that they did that. So you never knew which ending you would get. Now, Lee, you touched on that a little bit, I think, in the advertising of it, right? Do you want to do a quick refresher on that?
Sure. Well, and that was the line that ended every TV spot. It was whodunit. It depends upon where you see it. So I think, I don't know if that was multiple theaters within a city would show different endings, or if it was different regions of the country. I know that my friend who went to see it, I think it was in Sioux Falls, he saw the ending where they all did it. So I was really interested, like when it did come out on video, I was interested to see what the other two endings were, if it was a variation of that or if it was just one person. So I thought that was a really cool marketing tool that they used.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yep, I did as well. So there's two things that we talked about with regards to the multiple endings, one of which was we tried to think about other movies that had multiple endings like this. And we came upon ones that were very, very literal in that way, or very, very similar, and some that were a little bit removed, but still somewhat that way. So ones that were a pretty close match were Run, Lola, Run, which has the same story told several times, Wayne's World, Sliding Doors, which is an alternate universe kind of thing. So that's interesting. And then ones that were a little bit removed included Austin Powers, Drift, which I'm not familiar with. I think, Mark, you touched on that one. So if you maybe want to...
Not I.
No, wasn't you? Somebody mentioned Drift. I don't recall whom. Anybody? Jer, was that you?
If it was me, I got it off of a wiki page for multiple ending movies.
Got it. Okay, I think that's where I saw it too. Perfect. Well, we are well-informed folk. And then on Twitter, at Anne Cowlix, Ashley, my friend, mentioned The Savages. Her brother told her that The Savages apparently has multiple endings, fairly recent movie. And then Allison Milston on Twitter, at MNAllyAlly, said Return of the King, which I thought was pretty funny. It literally had multiple endings, but in a very different way than Clue.
It just didn't know how to end.
Yeah, it just kept, I mean, it just had, you know, it had 10 hours worth of plot lines to wrap up as opposed to Clue. So yes, it was definitely multiple endings, and actually a few people said that. But the biggest response was Wayne's World. Everybody said Wayne's World when I put a call out for that on Twitter. So well-loved and well-known movie. So that was the first part of it. But then the second part was how today, when we are remaking it, so no, regardless of when it's set, what the plot line is, how could we tap into today's world, whether it be viral marketing or technology or whatever, to do something equivalent or to do something similar, but then make it more interactive or make that experience more immersive. So, you know, we talked about, like, could there be a push button system in a theater? Could it be something that at some point in the theater, there's a 1 minute break where you pull out your phone and vote, although that just, you know, makes my skin crawl, the thought of people using their phones during the theater or in the theater. Like, you know, could you have something where in the first run of limited releases, you then pull people afterwards, so there's a bit.ly link at the end, bit.ly/clue ending. You go there and you vote on which one you liked, and then ultimately the one later on in full release gets that different one. So what do you guys think? Let's talk that through a little bit. What do you think we could do along those lines?
Well, I'm of the opinion that you have to have some sort of voting mechanism while people are watching the movie, so that they can actually see the end of the movie, and if to try to catch people on an exit poll means that they haven't seen an ending of the film. Because otherwise, you know, if they had seen an ending, then we wouldn't be asking them, who did you think did it? They would just tell us what happened in the ending of the movie. Even if it's not on a phone, you know, like, there could be some buttons on the, you know, the armrest of the theater seat, or there could be a little wired remote that has some buttons on it, but, you know, there could be a pause at some point in the movie, or people could just vote whenever they think they have an opinion. But I would really love to see a live voting system, and just whichever, when it comes to the critical point in the movie where the computer is going to decide the ending, you know, whichever character has the most votes, it just automatically happens.
From a logistical standpoint, the two things that I thought of, number one would be when you buy your ticket, and many theaters nowadays, the one I go to, it's easy, it's just as easy or easier to go up to a machine with a touchscreen, pick the time, pick the movie, slide your debit card, your credit card, and buy your ticket. And it would be incredibly simple to add in, you know, pick your time, pick your movie, pick the character that you want to see be the guilty one. Boom. There's your third choice. You swipe your card, you buy your ticket, and then compute things that way from the get-go. The problem with that one is that opening day or you know, first time you see the movie, you have all you know is sort of these characters based on either the video game or the trailers or whatever. From a logistical standpoint, doing it during the movie, you've got to account for two things. Number one, giving people time to vote. And number two, giving the theater time to prep that ending. So if it really was a majority rules, we are actually going to choose this ending, you've got to be able to give people time to choose. And then you have to give time to the person running the projector to go, okay, Colonel Mustard is the one that won. So I need to put the Colonel Mustard ending in.
Yeah. It would have to be digital.
It would. It would kind of disrupt the flow a bit.
So one of the things I thought of, which I think would be really clever, would be to have almost an intermission type period towards the end, where they actually literally did stop the film, made an intermission, threw out some fake commercials or something like that, like they used to do in old movies, old movie theaters, where they would have an intermission and show commercials for the concession stand and different things, and actually do that, allow people, which I think could be brilliant or could blow up in our society's face, allow people to say, okay, it's intermission. Now you can get on your cell phone and text blah, blah, blah to blah, blah, blah if you think this person did it. And all of a sudden people are like, oh, hey, I can actually use my cell phone now. And then they text their buddies or whatever instead of doing that. But then you give them that moment, and then they have, you know, this 2-3 minute break to vote, and then another 2-3 minutes for the theater to react to that voting and push the button or plug in whatever ending needs to have happened.
Yeah, I like the intermission.
I think that's a pretty hard sell. I mean, the idea that I originally had was that essentially it would play exactly as the DVD version that I watched has now. So it will show all of the endings, and it'll be akin to the testing process, right? So when you go see, if you're lucky enough to live in a town where they show really early prints of movies, maybe effects are not finished, they're testing things out, they're trying different edits, they're, you know, working that consumer viewpoint. So essentially, you do that just on a much grander scale. You know, with the end result being that maybe the DVD version or the Blu-ray version or whatever, you know, like the Blu-ray version, that I just put the emphasis on Ray. Weird. The Blu-ray version has that as the definitive ending, and then the other two are options, you know, because like I think you have to give them the opportunity to see all of them. I think it's going to be hard to do that without having seen them all. So I think afterwards, you know, something that's prompted to them, whether that be a push button or whatever, but they need to have seen them all, and then let them choose that. Let that be the deciding point.
For me, as an homage to the original, but to update it a little bit, I would want to shoot an ending that has, or it's like 7 different endings that has each one of them as a killer, and have, just like they did originally, a different ending depending upon where you see it.
I do like the idea of kind of the anarchy of that, of not knowing what you're going to see. Like, yep. You know, you could go on a Monday and it's one ending, you go on a Tuesday and it's a different ending. I like that. I like that you mix it up. I mean, and it also from a repeat customer perspective, you know, you'd have to make a pretty damn compelling movie for people to go multiple times, but maybe, I don't know, like if you bring in a token that you've seen it, maybe you get half off admission or something like that, you know, like to say like, well, we're showing a different ending, or maybe you publish that, like we're showing a different ending. So this week it's different than this next week. If you have your ticket stub from before, it's $3 or something like that, you know, so
get people to keep coming.
Theaters will keep getting, you know, popcorn sales like crazy. So they'll like that.
Yep.
Something like that. Interesting.
Yeah, I would be intrigued. The possibility of seeing a new ending the next time I see the film. It might bring me back.
Yep, especially if there's an incentive to do so.
I would definitely see that multiple times.
Well, it also could be that it's not just the endings. You know, maybe this is not just a 5-minute sequence at the end. It's that it's almost like a choose your own adventure kind of thing, except you're not choosing it. It's just that this is the adventure presented to you. So that the ending in which
have Colonel... your own adventure chosen for you.
Exactly. And that, so that the ending in which Colonel Mustard did it, there are plot points throughout that change ever so slightly. So then if you want to go into that kind of J.J. Abrams level, you know, Lost level of investigation, then you're suddenly looking at, you know, what was changed, what were different. You'd have, you know, blogs or forums saying, well, in Reel 1, he says this differently, he uses two different words, or, you know, something like that. Like, you know, we're putting a big assumption in here that people would actually do this, but I think it's interesting to to hypothesize and to talk about and think about, most definitely.
Get Damon Lindelof on the phone.
Yeah.
I'm more in favor of this option than simply filming a bunch of different endings. And there is one really big hurdle with that, just in that you have to make all the endings plausible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how plausible any of the ones, well, not any, but you know, it was very much tacked on in the original version that we are discussing. The endings were there because they needed to end the movie. You know, I mean, they wrapped them up pretty nicely, but nothing was like, aha, you know, like nothing was super compelling to me. I don't know. Maybe that was just me.
I felt the final ending was pretty definitive.
There was really nothing that, I mean, it wasn't like a Usual Suspects or anything like that where you get to the end and then you go, oh, and then you rewatch it and then you go, okay, I see how they were setting this up along the way.
Yeah.
They were really setting it up so that there was no definitive ending, and then they just added endings
to have
endings.
I actually did that and went back and rewatched the scenes, and
yep.
And they left a couple of possibilities, but not a lot of them.
Well, I did like, you know, some of the, when they talk about, you know, the moment when the cook is killed, you know, it's the scene before that when they're all running to the room where Yvette is screaming and Mrs. Peacock is the last to leave the room, and then the camera pans over and she disappears.
Yeah, she goes off frame to the right.
Yeah, it's those little things that are always fun to catch.
Mm-hmm. Or when they are standing in the kitchen, it's who are the characters that are not there?
Right.
Because one of them has to be the one to kill Mr. Body.
Professor Plum is the one who's not there.
And indeed he's not. I think they also left Miss Scarlet out of frame for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, lots of very interesting options. I don't know what the right answer is, but there's certainly possibilities. And it's, you know, the experience is only going to get more interactive. Like maybe you do that on the Blu-ray, right? So maybe in the theater, it's not the case, but then on the Blu-ray, you've got those dedicated buttons where you can switch scenes or you can have it. You can kind of pick your path as you go along. That would be pretty cool.
And you can do that with your DVD remote. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's just the sheer amount of data available on Blu-ray discs is that much greater. So you have that much more opportunity to put different storylines, totally different films, basically, within that.
It's only a matter of time.
Maybe not totally different, but slightly different films. If you press the blue button, you watch Free Willy. all right. Well, that was a good discussion, gentlemen. Thank you, as always. That's a darn fine time. So that wraps up the second half of our discussion of Clue. So thanks to you, listeners, for sticking with us and for letting us know how we're doing. Definitely hit up mathishard.net and send us feedback if you'd like, and rate our show on iTunes if you can. And check out our other podcast, Nerd Night MN, and some great stuff. We call those Slidecasts. So they're video presentations, but it's people giving presentations with the audio behind it, and then the video part is just the slides that they give. So it's very informative, lots of fun, and definitely worth your attention. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/mathishardnet and on Facebook at facebook.com/mathishardnet. Our next episode will be released on March 25th, and we will be discussing Star Wars: A New Hope. It is time. So, gentlemen, as always, thanks for your time and your great picks and discussion. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time, as always, and may the Force be with you.
And also with you.